Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when their sons are technology experts. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
I'm not going to say it. I knew you were going to make fun of me, so I'm not going to say it.
I said it for you. There you go.
No, it doesn't count.
We can move on.
Today is episode X. It's episode 10. And so we figured because it's episode X, we put a notch on the stream because we're very funny.
Yes. If you're listening,
imagine there's a notch.
Yes, imagine. Or if you have an iPhone,
look at it.
Just look at it.
And then you'll kind of get the gist of the energy that we've created here in the studio today. I think it was very funny and original.
I think it was a team effort. I think we workshopped it a little bit.
We really did. And it took Photoshop the notch out. It was a lot of work. So if you appreciated our work, go rate this podcast on your platform of choice. We're rated 5 stars on Apple Podcasts,
That's very good.
That's a little shameless plug right there. And you can rate it on multiple platforms, even if you only listen on one.
They don't tell you this, but no one's going to stop you.
That's a life hack. That's like one of those clickbait articles where it's like, this is what insurance companies don't want you to know.
Yeah.
Top 10 tips that podcast hosting platforms don't want you to know. You can just rate them even if you don't listen to the podcast. Everyone that's here on YouTube, pop that up on your phone, lock in that 5-star rating. You're good to go.
Yeah.
Got to lock that in. Otherwise, if we don't get 100 5-star ratings by the end of this week, we're moving our podcast over to the paid subscription platform.
Oh, boy.
That's the threat right there.
If we're not highly rated enough, then we start charging money for it.
Yes. That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes, because that's a really effective way to get people to like your podcast right there. In fact, while we're on the subject, I don't know anything about that new thing. How does it work?
I don't really know either, to be honest.
We literally host a podcast and they're like, hey, here's how you can monetize your podcast. And we're just like, not interested.
I'd be curious to know.
Apparently.
I'm not sure if you... I feel like the podcast, they could probably pay. They could charge. I don't know if it's like you pay to access the podcast at all. You could pay to access like extra like special episodes, like a Patreon kind of thing. I don't know if you could just like tip... you tip your creator like you can do in the stream here. I don't know how it works.
We should look into that. That would be smart. But we're not going to make this will never be a paid podcast. Like that'd be stupid.
Yeah, it's not worth.
It's not worth paying for. It's not even worth the investment of time, frankly.
Yeah.
All right. So our first topic today, in keeping with our theme about controversial design decisions with the notch, how do you like that transition?
All right.
The new iMac.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the white bezels and the chin.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that, but 5 days ago, Noah and I watched right here in these exact positions. And quite frankly, I don't understand the controversy. And as a matter of fact, where's my phone? Okay, I got to pull this up because given the state of comment sections and... Twitter mentions and stuff like that. I thought that this design was like super duper hated, but then I ran a poll on the channel and I was really shocked at the results. So, simple question. New iMac design, good or bad? That is what I queried.
Mm-hmm.
And the two options that you could choose from were good or bad.
Okay, very simple.
Pretty simple. Now, I didn't have a neutral opinion because I wanted to force everyone to make a decision. No one's allowed to be on the fence. The fence has been torn down. You cannot be on it anymore. There were 3,466 votes.
It's a good sample size.
Pretty decent sample size. 67% said good. Almost exactly two-thirds.
Yeah.
Well, that is exactly two-thirds.
Yeah.
Rounded.
Yeah.
And then 33% said bad. Now, granted, if you are talking about, from Apple's perspective, maybe they don't want a third of people to think it's ugly. But that's a pretty clear majority of people that, at the very least, do not mind the design. So I think what we've got here is a case of a very vocal few just absolutely screaming and hollering their eyes out.
Yeah, that's true. And I feel like the people... This is a discussion that that Luke and I had, and I think you also mentioned it in the video that you made about this, but I feel like the people that are getting annoyed, or not annoyed, but the people that don't like the design are not, like, the target audience for this computer. Like, they're the people that want, like, the M1X... And they want, like, the 30-inch display, and they want to do pro stuff on it. And that's not what this thing's meant for. So I think
I think
that's where a lot of... I mean, there are some people, I'm sure, that are in the target audience, and they just, you know, don't like the look of it. But I think a lot of the people that are against it are just not in the target audience, and they will get what they want in the future. But this is, you know, not meant for them yet.
Yeah, this is, I think, the thing that kind of threw people off. And I talked about this a little bit in my video from like 2 days ago, where I talked about the basically just defending the design. And basically what I think it boils down to is the old 4K iMac was a weird device. It was kind of like, it was kind of homeless. It was a little sad. The poor guy. Because on the one hand, it was kind of a pro device. Like, internally, it shared the processors. The 2019, the most recent version, shared its processors with the 2018 Mac Mini. So, 6-core... Well, it started with a quad-core i3, which is, like, whatever. But then it had a 6-core i7, a 6-core i5. Pretty decently powerful. Certainly, in early 2019, they were very decently powerful processors. And then the graphics were shared with the 15-inch MacBook Pro. Now, in 2019, I think that was really good value because you were getting the processors from a Mac Mini that started at $800, and you were getting the graphics from a MacBook Pro that started at $2,400, and you were getting a 4K display with it. Granted, you also got a Fusion drive and 8 gigs of RAM, inexplicably. But you were getting pretty decent specs. And now, obviously, that was no longer the case, you know, last week when it was still available to buy. And it was very outdated. But it was a little bit weird because it was like, okay, well, it kind of had pro specs. And it was pretty decent pricing, pretty decent value. But pros didn't really buy 21.5-inch iMacs all that much.
I mean, they're pretty small for...
Screen is really small.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to go for a desktop... I feel like pros went for 15-inch MacBook Pros, but then if they were going to go for a desktop, I don't know why you wouldn't just go for the 5K.
Yeah.
And so that's what most people did. I mean, I didn't even really consider the 4K iMac when I wanted to upgrade from doing all of my video work on my 2016 MacBook Pro. And so basically, I think the fact that the old iMac was like kind of a pro machine, but wasn't actually bought by pros, and then now it's very clearly not giving it, it's they're very, very clearly not trying to say this is the pro iMac.
Right.
Even though the M1 chip is very powerful, and you could absolutely, and I will, do pro tasks on it, it's not. That's not the way that it's being targeted. And I think people got thrown off by that. Now, I will say the one really valid point that I think will actually play a role is if you do want to do pro stuff, especially color work, the white bezels can kind of throw off the eye a little bit.
Interesting.
So that one I would concede is a valid point.
That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I feel like, yeah, like if you're doing the pro kind of work, like you could use one of these iMacs, but that's not what they're targeted for. And I think we're gonna get the Pro Display XDR looking iMac Pro, or they'll just call it the 30-inch iMac or whatever they're gonna call it. But I think we will get that, and that will be what people actually want, or you know, the people that are saying they don't like this design, I think they're gonna get it with the no chin and whatever. But like, I don't know. It's a classic design. You know, it's a modern take on a classic design with the chin. They brought back all the colors, which is super awesome. And even just, I don't know, in their announcement and all of their marketing that we've seen so far, they know exactly who they're targeting this at, and it's not pros.
Someone brought up an interesting point here in the chat. They don't mind the bezels or the chin, but removing the logo makes it look like a cheap knockoff. I don't know. I don't actually think the Apple logo on the front adds anything. I think the goal with Apple products is to make it identifiable without a logo. Even if it's not, like, you know, I feel like if everyone got what they wanted, or at least what they thought they wanted, you would have a phone that's just a square, a rectangular screen, mm-hmm. with no bezels on it, and like a glass on the back or whatever, and it would just be like this smooth, like a flat stone. You could like skip it across lakes, yeah. And then a screen would just be big rectangle. Like everything would just be various shapes of rectangle. There's not really any design to it. So yeah, I definitely agree, and I think I should also clarify that I don't think it's better the way that it is. Like, I wouldn't rather have white bezels and a chin than a Pro XDR display. I just think that you can have both of those things. And I think that people are going to... I think this iMac is going to sell really well. Much better than the previous version, because I think this design is eye-catching enough that people who wouldn't have considered an iMac purely because they didn't know about it would give it a second look.
Yeah, I think, like, in the places, I don't know, like, if you're a pro, there are other things that you're going to be more concerned about. Like, you're going to be looking really at the specs and all that kind of stuff. When you're, you know, a more casual user, which is what this is targeted at, the colors make a difference. That's why the iPhones are available in a bunch of different colors. That's why the iPad Air is available in a bunch of different colors. So, like, for consumers like that, they're going to like the colors. When you see these in, like, hotels and office buildings and stuff like that, hey, if they can get a color that matches, you know, the room that it's in, or the logo or something, you know, they'll, mm-hmm. they'll definitely go for it.
I think it would not be a stretch to say that Apple is a fashion company almost as much as they're a technology company. That might sound pretty crazy, but think about it. Apple products... The Apple ecosystem is all designed to cultivate an aesthetic. And I think this definitely feeds into that. Although, I will say, why the heck are all the colors different? Like, why are there... You can't really color match everything that you have, because, like, the colors don't... They're not the same. Like, yeah. the pink on the front of the iMac is sort of similar, but not quite the same as the AirPods pink. But then also the back of the iMac is like red, mm-hmm. and it, which doesn't match at all. And I like, you can't actually get all the same colors. I guess, okay, the green, no, never mind. No, the green on the iMac is all like teal, whereas on the AirPods it's green, and on the iPad Air it's like a very, very pale minty green.
I thought they were unifying the colors. Like, I thought they would look, I guess I didn't really look, but I thought like green on the iMac, and I get there's the duotone, but like green on the iMac, green on the AirPods, green on the iPad Air. I thought it's not the same shade.
I think the AirPods Max and the iPad Air, like the aluminum cups and the iPad Air, are the same shade, okay. But the aluminum part of the iMac is not the same at all.
That's weird.
The stand might be.
Okay.
But the back is like almost, it looks teal. I really like the look personally, but it's definitely different, which is weird. Also, I have to say, I think the award for one of the worst takes goes to this comment. Apple is not a tech company. They are a manufacturing company. They don't actually own any factories, so that's not that does not make sense. That just amuses me. They don't manufacture anything.
Yeah, I'm not sure about
that. I mean,
that.
They do, but it's outsourced. It's the point.
Yeah, I'll just say my thing about the iMac. I like the design. I like the duotone look that it has. I like that there's the big Apple logo on the back, and I don't think you need an Apple logo on the front. I don't think any other product has an Apple logo on the front of it, right? The iPhone, it's on the back. iPad, it's on the back. iMac and Apple, or the Mac Pro and the Apple TV, whatever, it's on the top. I don't think you really have them on the front. So I think the big Apple logo on the back looks good. I don't think you need one on the front. That's my
And
that's
you know what's interesting?
Take.
Oh, you know what's interesting is I think so I don't know if you picked up on this, but a lot of the conversation about why people weren't happy with it is they're like, why did they spend so much time designing the back of it if you're going to look at the front and you're only ever going to see the front? I think that is another example of how people kind of misunderstand what this device is targeted for, because I mean, if you look at the, you can get a sense of the type of people that Apple wants to buy their products by the videos that they make. And what you noticed was a lot of like families and like people in their homes with their computers on desks in the middle of rooms.
Right.
And I think a lot of this iMac specifically is designed because like for me as a pro, my iMac's right up against a wall. But I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily do that with their iMacs. And certainly with this iMac, I would rethink if I were like redecorating my space, I would definitely think about my desk placement from like a this could be a centerpiece perspective. Because I think it makes a really interesting statement. I mean, someone said in the kitchen. I could see that. Like on like a kitchen island. Not on an island. That would be where the food goes. But like in a kitchen adjacent spot, or like when, you know, people have like a desk in the middle of a room where it's like they look at the door. So you walk in and you see the desk.
Right.
That. Yeah. I think there's plenty of use cases outside of pro users that sit at their workbench where people are going to see the back of this iMac.
And, you know, I'll say another thing. The Pro Display XDR, the back looks really cool with all those crazy pipe things. But they made the back like that because the Pro Display XDR, they're focused more on the pro performance and being able to cool it and, you know, all that stuff. Whereas the iMac, they're focused more on, you know, the consumer aspect, which is why it's colorful.
I do wonder, do you think, now that you bring that up, do you think maybe the 30-inch iMac adopts that porous cooling look from the XDR?
I would be curious, because I guess if they're going to get rid of, if they're not going to have the chin on it, then the computer is going to be in, like, I guess behind the display, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would think, see, I'm actually not convinced that the 30-inch iMac does away with the chin.
Okay.
I suspect that the chin is here to stay. I think it is really distinctive of the iMac from a branding perspective. I mean, it's been around since like 2005. So I don't know. Maybe it's like a fun, quirky thing on this iMac, but not on the more pro version of the iMac. However, I think it's also worth noting that Apple doesn't ever like fully go for the pros. Apple never targets niche audiences. They try to target as many people as they can. Now, obviously the Mac Pro would be an exception to that, where it was like a little bit more like, you know, normal people aren't dropping $6,000 on a Mac Pro. Like,
also,
that's
to
just
be
not
fair. Like, when you say pro, there are so many different kinds of pros.
Well, exactly.
So it's not like even the Mac Pro, like, obviously very expensive, very fancy thing, but like programmers and, you know, video editors and and people like that. Like, there's all sorts of different pros. So like you said, they don't get into a specific niche. So pro is not maybe as much of a niche as you might think.
Yeah. But I definitely would not be surprised, especially considering that I don't believe the iMac Pro, the Pro Display XDR has speakers. Am I correct in thinking that?
I'm not sure. That's a good question.
If it does, they're probably very minimal. I mean, actually, no, maybe it doesn't, because the Mac Pro I know has an internal speaker, like, you know, the terrible one that you would get with like a Mac Mini or something. But I don't think the Mac Pro has that. I could see the chin being quite useful. Like okay, so imagine this, okay? Here's a hypothetical.
Okay.
With the 24-inch iMac, they definitely were putting an emphasis on the sound quality. That was a whole like 5 or so minutes of the presentation that they devoted specifically to talking about the new speaker setup. Mm-hmm. And that was made possible because essentially in the 24-inch iMac, the computer part is in the chin. The screen, it's not so much a screen on top of a computer as it is a screen above a computer.
That's true.
Now, obviously with a 30-inch iMac, I don't expect that to be the case anymore, because hopefully at least we're going to get M1X, and it's going to be a little bit beefier, and it will probably be thicker and have the computer part behind the screen. But what about essentially integrating a sound bar in the chin and having like a 6-speaker setup with like the beam forming and all their crazy stuff?
That's really interesting, actually, because they did focus a decent amount of time, especially relative to like how much time they spent talking about the iMac. They spent a decent amount of time talking about the speakers
and spatial audio.
They brought spatial. That was really interesting. They brought spatial audio over. So I feel like, yeah, the iMac Pro, if they want to, or whatever they're going to call it, if they maybe they will go for a pretty fancy speaker system. That'd be cool.
I honestly think, I mean, I would assume that there's going to be some speaker upgrades, but I think keeping the chin around for a design and iconic and also utilitarian perspective, I think it would be pretty interesting. You know, I think we shouldn't knock it until we see what happens. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's done well. Like a silver and space gray chin, I feel like that could be done well. So actually, I guess continuing on our theme of talking about things that came about in relation to the recent Apple event, next up on our docket was macOS on iPad Pro.
Yeah, I've seen some discussion about this.
A lot of people have been talking about, oh my gosh, now that the iPad Pro has an M1 chip, they're going to put macOS on it. The first thing that I will say, I'm very curious to get your take, Noah, but the first thing that I will say is it's not so much Apple put the Mac chip in an iPad as it is Apple put the iPad chip in the Mac, but they did that first.
It's true.
The A14X, which never came to be, but would have been an M1 chip. Like, the A12X, which both Noah and I have in our 2018 iPad Pros, is exactly the same as an M1, but without some of the Mac accelerators, obviously, and also, you know, with A12 cores. It's the same, like, TDP, the same core layout, the same GPU layout. They're the same exact thing, but just now with newer cores, and obviously it's a lot more powerful therein.
Well, the first Apple Silicon Mac had an iPad processor in it.
Which one?
The developer transition kit.
That's true. It had an A12Z.
So.
Yeah. So it basically, I think it does basically boil down to a branding decision, because when you say, ooh, we put an M1 chip, it just sounds cool. It's the same chip.
Yeah.
It was always going to be the same chip. But I was surprised that they called it the same chip.
Yeah, no, I was surprised by that.
So, yeah. What is your take on that? macOS on an iPad. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because I just had a couple other thoughts. First of all, I can't... my initial reactions, it would seem like Apple would be like cannibalizing their own sales, right? If you put macOS on an iPad, or you let even if it's like a simplified version, I don't know. I feel like then it starts to step on the iPad Air or the MacBook Air, I should say. the iPad is so confusing. You know,
the iPad Air is already stepping on the iPad Pro.
I know. There's like so much. Exactly. There's so much. But I feel like the iPad would start to step on the Mac a lot. But then now I'm thinking like, Apple doesn't seem to have that much of an issue. Like you just said, the iPad Air stepping on the iPad Pro, and then when they called it the M1, you know, and they put that in the iPad, like, I almost would have thought they would have said, you know, keep the M1 for the Max, and it's sort of like a step above. But they're saying no, the iPad is the same power, but it's running, I would argue, a much less powerful operating system. I mean, there's obviously trade-offs, but
I think what we really need, as the Super Chat points out, is Windows XP on iPad Pro.
Well, you could do, there's that that UTM emulator, the virtual machine
thing. Oh yeah.
Thing.
We gotta run that on the new iPads.
But I think you can do Windows XP in there. So we could
that would be funny.
But I don't know. What was the question?
The question was, do you think macOS will come to the iPad?
No.
All right, cool. That's that.
Yeah, that's it. No, I don't think so, because if it does, then like I don't see how you can have an iPad and a Mac as like separate. I guess they're sort of like two different like approaches to the, like, if you had the same operating system, it's like sort of two different like means of interacting with the operating system. But even still, like, the iPad has the Magic Keyboard and the trackpad and whatever. The only difference is like it has a touchscreen, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you're gonna put macOS on the iPad, then macOS has to support the touchscreen. You're gonna get Mac apps that support the touchscreen. Some of them might require it. You get like a fractured experience, whatever. It's a whole thing. I just can't imagine. Like, there are just a bunch of, like, so many reasons that I can't imagine Apple doing it.
There's so many reasons why they wouldn't, but I think there's one that's the most true.
Okay.
And that is, if you put macOS on an iPad, then why in the hell would you buy both?
Yeah.
Apple wants to sell you a MacBook and an iPad because they have different, some might be better for certain things. I mean, for a lot of drawing applications, a 12.9-inch iPad Pro is like the dream machine, especially now with mini LED. But yeah. Then for other things, like, for example, I think one of the things that people are kind of forgetting is like, okay, so the 12.9-inch iPad Pro might have the same chip as an iPad, or sorry, a MacBook Air. Jesus, now I'm doing it too. Good grief. But a MacBook Air is $1,000, but it already has the keyboard and the trackpad. If you want that on the iPad Pro, you have to spend $1,450 to get the smart keyboard, the Magic Keyboard, and the base 128GB iPad Pro. That's a tidy sum.
Yeah.
And the display is still a smaller size, 12.9 compared to 13.3 inches. So I don't think there's a lot of competition. I don't think there will be a lot of competition. Like, you know, you can't just put macOS on an iPad. First of all, it's a screen aspect ratio that no Mac has ever seen. Plus, there's the whole issue of touch, like having to make that work and then having to make Mac developers make that work. Like, I think it's just a whole thing, and it seems like a lot of effort only to cannibalize your own sales.
Yeah, I can definitely see iPadOS and macOS getting closer together, which, first of all, they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Apple separated iPadOS out into its own name, which is really just for show because it's obviously very similar to macOS, or very similar to iOS. But, you know, maybe we'll see them drift further
iOS
apart.
Plus.
iOS Plus.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds like a subscription service.
You have to pay for iOS.
iOS Plus, yeah.
You get the initial version on your phone, but if you want to get the future updates, you have to subscribe to iOS Plus.
Yeah, and it's $46 per month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is a really premium subscription plan here, but it allows you to download more RAM, for one.
Okay.
Which is, of course, also subscription-based.
Uh-huh.
And it's an ad-free experience.
Oh, no ads in the operating
system. No, it's an ad-free experience.
Okay, okay.
What else would iOS Plus offer? I feel like it would just be iPad OS, but paid for $46 a month.
$46 seems worth it. Well, here's my question, though.
Yes.
If you stop paying,
what happens? Bricks the device.
I was going to say, does it downgrade the device? But Apple hates downgrading. They don't let you do it. Bricks it.
Completely bricks it. You got to throw it away. It's e-waste.
That sounds like Apple.
They love e-waste.
Don't let them tell you otherwise.
They will. They'll tell you a lot of otherwise. They'll talk about, oh, BPA-free display. Oh, we don't use arsenic. Oh, we don't, like, poison this stuff or whatever. But it's like, oh, yeah, well, guess what? You don't let anyone get the activation lock off of it. And then they end up in landfills. And that is iOS Plus.
Back to you, Tim.
We are so thrilled to introduce iOS Plus, our newest way of increasing e-waste by 400% for $46 a month. It's like, didn't Sonos get into some trouble where they were like basically converting their original things into trash?
I very vaguely remember what you're talking about, but not really.
I think they had like a software update that like disabled them or something.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
I feel like I gotta look this up.
Okay, what were we talking about before we got into this?
Mac OS on an iPad?
Yes. Do you remember where we were going from there?
I do not.
Okay. Mac OS on an iPad. I don't know. They're just different things.
I found the thing.
You found it.
So Sonos had, I don't know if this is still true, but they had a recycle mode, which intentionally bricks a device. I don't know why anyone would possibly want that. It's a software feature that once activated begins a countdown. It's literally a self-destruct button that eventually renders older Sonos devices inoperable.
Does Sonos take the old one?
I think it's a trade-in thing.
No, it says take it to a certified e-recycling facility. Or you could ship it back to Sonos. But I feel like if Sonos took the device back and they used some like internal tool to unbrick it and then sell it as like a refurbished thing, maybe. But like, that's really weird. When was this?
This is about a year ago, December 2019, year and a half.
The before times.
Ah, sad. Anyway, the point is iOS Plus would do that, essentially. It would activate a self-destruct switch that would, I think, you know what it would do? They would have like a physical trigger inside the device that would bridge the battery and just put the whole device up in smoke.
Yikes. Little Note 7 action there.
Now, if we may attempt to course correct briefly. Yes. Someone pointed out here one chip M1 to rule them all, and that actually brought up the next topic that I wanted to talk about, which was, at what point does the M1 chip stop being cool and powerful and start being not good enough? Because right now what we are seeing is Apple is they're getting a lot of mileage out of this thing.
They are.
They're getting a lot of mileage out of the M1 chip. I mean, think about this. Mac Mini, iPad Pro. I'm going in price order, by the way. iPad Pro 11-inch. MacBook Air, iPad Pro 12.9-inch. MacBook Pro. And then three different things of iMac. Those are six devices. Six. That are running the M1 chip. That's a lot of Apple's product stack. I think it's already half the Macs that you could buy are on M1.
Interesting. And then wasn't the rumor that even some of the new Macs coming out were going to have it? Like the 14-inch?
Oh, I don't know if I saw it. Oh, yeah. That one was one. I don't know how much rumory stuff there is about that one. I think I'm going to work on a video about the new generation of MacBook Pro, because I think that the 14-inch will have an M1 chip. What do you guys think in the chat? I'm very curious. I guarantee people are going to be disappointed by that right now. But here's the thing. If I may explain myself. Right now, Apple sells two main configurations of the M1 MacBook Pro. At $1,299, you get 8 gigabytes of RAM and a 256 gigabyte SSD. For $1,499? I'm pretty sure, yeah. $1,499, you bump up to 512 gigabytes. So we have to keep in mind, Apple charges $200 to double the storage or to double the RAM. Mm-hmm. So 8 to 16, $200. 256 to 512, $200. And I believe it's another 200, or is it 400 to do a terabyte?
It might be another 200.
200 on top of the 512?
Total.
We'll go ahead and fact check this. We're doing a little bit of... We'll do it live! A little bit of live fact checking here. So from the 512 SSD, yeah, $200 brings you up to a terabyte. And then it's another $400 to get up to two. That's pretty hefty. Anyway, the point is, if you're talking about a price increase of $200 to double the storage and double the RAM, that means if you wanted to go over the base M1 and you wanted to do 16 and 512, you are looking at, what is that, $1,899?
400.
Wait, $1,699.
Yeah, $400 over $1,299.
Yeah, so $1,699. Curiously, the 4 Thunderbolt port Intel MacBook Pro, which you can still buy, by the way, is $1,799.
Okay.
So imagine this. The rumor up until this point has been that the new MacBook Pro will have mini LED displays. It'll have a new M1X chip. It'll have a new design. It'll have no touch bar. It'll have more ports. That's a lot of new functionality. And we don't even know from like a software or an integration standpoint, you know, bringing back MagSafe, you've got all of that. I think it's very likely that there could even be like Ethernet on the power brick like you get with the iMac. I don't see why they wouldn't bring that. That would be cool.
Yeah.
That's a lot. So I find it hard to believe that would just be a $100 premium over a decently spec'd M1 MacBook Pro. That seems un-Apple. It seems too good to be true, essentially.
Well, here's the question. Do you think that they're going to get rid of the current M1 MacBook Pro, or that they're going to keep it and put this 14-inch MacBook Pro on top of it?
I think it's almost guaranteed that this is on top of.
Okay.
Almost guaranteed. I do not see a world where... I mean, unless, I don't know, maybe if they put M1, maybe it's a lateral move. It's possible. It's possible with an M1 chip that, you know, there's a version without a mini LED display that just fits in as a replacement. But I think the way that this is being positioned is as an addition. And it's not exactly unprecedented. That's how Apple has operated in the past. Think back to 2012, the unibody stuck around. And then in 2016, the early 2015 stuck around for at least the first cycle. And unfortunately, I just don't think... I mean, I guess there's two options. Either M1 chip in the 14-inch MacBook Pro. Because at that point, it's like, okay, I think you could make an argument for, would I rather go for 16 gigabytes of RAM and 512 gigabytes of storage and go for like a spec'd out M1 MacBook Pro, or would I rather, you know, get the other features like the ports and the display and the new design and go for less RAM in the newer one for more money? You know, you could kind of have that discussion, but I don't think Apple is in the business of, let me give you 80% more performance and twice the memory and twice the storage and mini LED and a new design and more ports and MagSafe, and it's $500 more. That's a long list of things to get for $500.
Yeah.
The other option I could see potentially is just dropping the $1,799 and having it be at $1,999. It's a bit steep.
So there are what, three? How many levels of Intel 13-inch MacBook Pro are there?
Two. So there's two M1s and two Intels. The Intels come in at, so the Intels all have 16 gigabytes of RAM. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they have an M1 chip. Maybe you get 16 gigabytes on this new 14-inch one.
But you think there might only be one?
I think there might be, well, I don't know if there's one or two. I mean, the only difference between these configurations is storage anyway. So it's not like a real difference. It doesn't matter. But I would just say perhaps there will not, in fact, be an M1X 14-inch MacBook Pro. I think it's also worth noting, people are saying that they are curious about M2. I think Apple Silicon is going to skip generations.
Interesting.
There's an iPhone chip every year. A14, A15, A16. I don't think there's going to be an Apple chip every year because they're not updated all at once.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I guess the A-series chips are just iPad and iPhone. Or I guess the iPads sort of have their own because they're like the X or the Z. It's really the iPhones, I guess, that drive it. But yeah, the iPhone gets updated every year, a new chip. It's a good point. The Macs don't all get updated at once. Some of them get updated more often than others.
I mean, think of it this way. We just got, in April, a new iMac that launches in May. That's 4 months before the A15 chip is going to come out. And then an M1 would come out. Like, basically, the iMac would be outdated in 6 to 8 months.
Well, okay, here's a question. Here's an interesting question. So you say outdated. It wouldn't be the latest chip anymore. But, like, if you have an iPhone 11 series and it has, what, the A13 chip in it, it's certainly not outdated, right?
No, I just mean, like, Apple launches a brand new product on this chipset, and within 8 months they launch an M2 chipset.
Well, here's my question. And then, so it's like we said, you know, the iPhone gets updated every year, and you see, you know, it gets a new processor. That's a given. The iPad maybe doesn't get updated every year, but it sort of follows along with the iPhone processor. I guess now it has the M1, so sort of anyone's guess. Actually, that makes my theory or my question even more interesting, is could we see Macs get updated more frequently, even if they're just smaller, like, spec bump level things? Could they get updated more often now that Apple isn't waiting on Intel for the processors or whatever? Could the M series fall in line with the A series and get more frequent, smaller updates? And
I don't think so.
The iPad might be some evidence. You know, you look at the history of the iPad and now it has an M1 in it. I don't know.
I would say if I'm looking at the history of the iPad, I reached the opposite conclusion, actually.
Okay.
Because iPads, especially the flagship iPads, have used X chips for a while.
True.
However, there was no A13X. There was no A11X. There was no A... Was there an A9X? I don't think so.
I don't know.
I think only the even numbers have had X's, except for, like, the early days. Like, the original iPad Pro, I believe, had an A8X. iPad Pro first generation. We got to find this out. Because I think basically iPads have skipped, like, the X chips have skipped a generation for at least quite a while now. Actually, why don't I just look up Apple A series X chips, right? That could be. So there was an A5X, and then there was an A6X. Wow, almost immediately, yeah, I was right. So there was a 5, which was the original. That was in the iPad 3rd gen when they went to Retina, so they needed more GPU power. And then there was an A6X, no 7. Then there was an A8X, no 9. No, wait, I'm a liar. There was an A9X. I'm an idiot. But then there was an A10X, no A11, A12X, no A13, and then M1 is basically an A14X.
Okay.
So I would suspect, I think the exceptions are few there and pretty old. But since 2016, they've basically been skipping generations. So I wouldn't be surprised. And I think it's also worth noting that they started skipping generations when they went into the big little architecture. So I think basically I would expect Apple Silicon chips, because they take a while to roll out, it would be kind of goofy if they introduce a new generation that only lasts a year when it takes them a year to put it in all the stuff. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And then I could also see it. I could see the M1 chip living on in the same way that, like, they just announced an Apple TV with an A12. Like, they keep old chips around for whatever reason. So I think for people, I've seen it a couple times. People are like, oh, don't buy an M1 now. The M2 is around the corner. I don't think it is. I think the biggest reason is, well, for one, it takes a long time for them to actually implement it, especially given how many devices the M1 is in now. And two, if you skip a generation, then the leaps are bigger, because their performance leaps coincide with the A series, because the A series is the foundation for the X series. And when they skip, like when they skipped 13, they were able to compare 14 to 12 and be like, wow, cool. Where it's like, okay, yeah, but that was 2 years ago. Not that it really matters, because the M1 is still pretty great. But yeah, I just would not expect, I don't know, maybe they'll even do a 3-year cycle. Like, it's a 2-year transition. Are we to expect that the Mac Pro comes out with A14 based processors in an A17 year or whatever? Like, it's going to be a mess.
It's true.
The whole thing is a mess. But it's less of a mess with M1. And actually, I think going back to the original point, at what point does the M1 become not good enough? In a base model MacBook Air and in the you know, the entry-level stuff, even in this iMac, I think, great fit. But at what point, at what price or category do you think, Noah, that it becomes not really acceptable anymore?
That's an interesting, I mean, there's two ways to think about it, I guess. You could think in terms of, like, in one, for example, it obviously doesn't belong in a Mac Pro, or I guess an iMac Pro, hypothetically.
Yeah.
It clearly doesn't belong, you know, you look at the products that it's been in, and you look at the limitations, the number of Thunderbolt ports, the maximum amount of RAM, et cetera, et cetera.
Display outputs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's one way to look at it. It doesn't belong there. I guess you could look at it from like a time perspective as well, because like obviously it belongs in the MacBook Air and the you know, the 13-inch MacBook Pro and whatever. But like, how about in 5 years from now, is the current MacBook Air with the M1 still going to be good enough? So there's sort of two ways to look at it. And first of all, yeah, like I'm thinking like to my 2018 iPad Pro, which is 2.5 years old now, right? It's November 2018. It's like two and a half
years.
Wow.
Really holding up really well.
Yeah, it's 2.5 years old, and it's really, I have no complaints. It's just, as far as I can tell, it's just as fast as it was when I got it.
And that was pre-iPad OS. Because in 2018, true, the iPad had a lot less functionality than it does now. And it's not very often that you get a device that is able to scale as much as this generation of iPad Pro has. I think that's the biggest problem that the new ones have. How in the world are they going to get anyone to upgrade?
Yeah, they have to introduce, like, I don't know, I guess.
I don't even know. I don't have any like wish list stuff for my iPad Pro. Not one thing. I don't know. Maybe it's because I just think of it as, I don't know, I guess I have less things that I would want to do on an iPad Pro, so that maybe I don't have as much of a bucket list. But also, it's just so good that I can't even like think of changes that I would make to it. That's really hard to do, because every single other Apple product I look at, I always have like a big long list of wish list items. Mm-hmm. Face ID, new designs, more power, I would like a GPU. An Apple GPU. Like, I've got this whole list of things that I would want to change. But with my iPad Pro, I'm just like, that's nice. That's a nice thing right there.
Yeah, and like, there are some things you could think of. Like, what if it had two ports on it?
Obviously, that's true.
The Magic Keyboard does have like the extra power port, which is nice. But like, I don't need two ports personally. And I'm not sure how big of an of a how much that would do to convince people to upgrade. But anyways, so going back to the point, right? The iPad Pro, my 11-inch iPad Pro, 2.5 years old. As far as I can tell, just as good as the day it came out. I don't see any signs of slowing down. We'll see. I don't know. The rumors are saying that the iPad OS is supposed to get a big update at WWDC this
summer. I would expect.
Which I'm excited about.
I think, yeah, no, that's really interesting. It's gonna be weird. I think I'm going to review the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Personally, I don't think there's really a need to buy and test the 11-inch personally.
Yeah.
I don't think you gain a whole lot. Granted, the 12.9-inch is pretty minor, too. Like, really, all I want to do is take a look at that mini LED display. I'm going to buy it for that.
Yeah.
And so I guess you could say maybe they got me on the upgrade from the 11-inch to the 12.9-inch. Maybe they'll get some people with that, too. However, I feel like the fact that they're putting M1 in it and then the mini LED display, to me, that definitely spells big things for iPad OS.
Oh, that's a good point. I want to ask you also, if you weren't a YouTuber, would you be buying this iPad Pro?
Heavens no. $1,450? Good lord.
Yeah, so there you go. That's, you know, you're saying like, oh, maybe they got you with the
true.
Well, they just,
that's fair. They do get me a lot.
They get you a lot.
They get me all the time.
But that's an occupational hazard.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I'm quite glad about that. If anything, everyone here, this is like a reverse Alcoholics Anonymous, to be honest. Because now, whenever a new Apple product comes out, I'm like, well, I gotta buy it.
Yeah.
In the past, it was not a good thing because I shouldn't have been buying them.
Yeah.
Although, granted, before I did YouTube, I just kind of didn't. I was just kind of like, oh man, someday.
That's true.
And then today is someday.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys basically just validate my habit of being able to lust over Apple products, but
it's
then
a dangerous
actually,
cycle.
Yeah, it's a dangerous cycle. Noah's pretty much immune from that cycle. I don't know how you do it.
I'm just
stubborn.
I just look at the facts, and I say,
which are?
I look at what I have. I look at what's out there, and I say, you know, what I have is good enough.
Even if it's breaking all the time?
Well, it's...
You stuck with your 2011 MacBook Pro that was absolutely falling to pieces for too many years.
I feel like that was... Maybe that was like a pride thing or like an attachment.
Mm. You did sort of have like this weird emotional bond with it.
It served me well. But, okay.
The way that you said that, I didn't like.
That is right in the gutter. Your mind went right to the gutter.
Uh-huh.
I will just say, so okay, the point that I was trying to make with the iPad is that chip, you know, the A12X, right, which is, you know, it 2.5 years later, still just as good, and I see it lasting, you know, plenty longer. Okay, so the question was about the M1. When does it become...
Oh, man, we went on many tangents.
We went way off.
This is crazy.
When does the M1 become not powerful enough? First of all, like, when you look at the products that exist, like, it's not going in the pro-level products, right?
Yeah.
Base model MacBook Pro, I don't know how much of a pro product it necessarily is. But like,
it's
the
a kind of
tier.
Pro, but it's not, like, you're not going to use it for, like... Yeah, again, basically what you said with the limitations. The ports, the displays, the RAM... It starts to become anything. I don't know. I would not spend over $2,000 on an M1 product.
That's fair. Right. So it doesn't belong in the pro products. Apple knows that because you look at the products that they've put out so far and they're very clear. Apple's very clear about who they're targeting. If you look at, you know, their marketing and their messages and whatever. So obviously, you know, not the pro products, but like, as far as the products that exist today and how long they're going to last, I think they're going to, you know, they're going to last. Like if you, you know, my mom got her M1 MacBook Air and I think it's going to last her for a very long time. She had the 11-inch, like 2012 MacBook Air or something. And that lasted.
Yeah. I mean, that was supported for 7 years.
I say lasted, but it was pretty rough by the end. The battery life and the performance were very, very rough by the end.
True, but it was also an Ivy Bridge U-Series i5. Like, that's some old stuff. And it was still, like, I think also the battery life at some points, like, when your battery is really going, it does take a hit on performance, I suspect. I don't know if that's true or not, but I feel like that had something to do with it. But she also had a 2012 iMac until, well, currently.
Yes, that's true. But the point is, right, the M1 MacBook Air will probably last for quite a long time. So I guess that is my answer to your question, is when does the M1 become not good enough? Well, for real high-level pro stuff, it's not. For the consumer stuff, it'll be a while before.
Oh, I meant in terms of, like, for a new product, at what point are you spending too much on an M1? That's what I meant.
Okay.
Like, so the way that I see it is the 14-inch MacBook Pro, I could forgive having M1. If it's $1,799 with all the new design and ports and features and a mini LED display and 16 gigs of RAM, maybe.
Okay.
I could forgive that. Anything beyond that, anything further up the product stack, I'm going to say no.
Oh, I agree. 16-inch MacBook Pro doesn't belong there.
If that has M1, I will be furious. Yeah. The 16-inch, that is inexcusable.
That doesn't, or at the very least, that can't, they can't just be.
If, yeah, it if has to have an upgrade.
If they're going to make, like, the base 16-inch, I don't think they would, but if they were to do a base 16-inch with an M1, as long as they have the upper ones that have an M1X or whatever in it.
That's no, fine. I'm not even, no. That's no?
No. No?
Okay, look, the M1 comes in a $700 Mac Mini. If I'm spending $2,300, they had better put something better than that.
Okay, that's fair.
So there is no situation where an M1 16-inch is acceptable, unless they suddenly make it cheaper also. I don't know. If it's $1,500 with an M1 chip, now you're talking. But I don't think that's going to happen.
So.
Although there was a rumor about a 15-inch MacBook Air, which I think would be really interesting.
That's interesting, but then I feel then the 13 or 14-inch MacBook Pro gets even muddier. Like that.
Ooh, yeah, then it would need to have M1X, and then you'd be like, okay, do I want... Oh, yeah, that's true. That would be kind of a mess.
I mean, Apple is not averse to making a mess out
that's
of
true.
Products, but I don't know.
I'll tell you what I really hope for.
What's that?
Is a Mac Pro Mini or Mac Mini Pro. I want a Mac Mini that's taller with some beefier guts and an M1X chip in it for like $1,500, $16.
I could see like the Airport Extreme design.
Yeah.
Like they're like a really tall Apple TV kind of design.
Maybe a bit bigger footprint.
Yeah, sure, sure.
I think that would look really good.
It would be pretty cool.
I would also be interested in something like that, but with a front grill with like the cheese grater pattern from the Mac Pro. I might work on a concept of that. That one would look really good.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, when you were talking about where the M1, you know, where the cutoff is, another thing I was going to say was the Mac Pro, or sorry, the Mac Mini, the Intel one that still exists, right?
Yes.
They're going to replace that. They have to replace that with an M1X or whatever.
I hope they replace it at the same price point.
Yeah.
$1,099.
With an M1X.
If there's a $1,099 M1X MacBook Pro, I mean Mac Mini, good grief. We're getting all tongue-tied tonight.
There's so many.
It's hard to keep track.
Interchangeable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you take your you take the product, and then you take like the
mini
like
or
the
pro
mini
or
pro
Max Air,
and then you take one or more
XDR.
Of those. You could mix them up a little.
Super
bit.
Liquid Retina XDR, whatever
yeah, exactly.
they call it. Like what in the world?
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess that goes back to what you were saying. They're not afraid to make a mess.
Yes.
But oh my gosh, M1X Mac Mini. Oh, I would honestly consider ditching an iMac for that. Because like at that price, you could spec it out, get yourself like a big ultra wide or something. Oh my God, it would be amazing. It would be amazing. I want that product so bad.
I do like ultra wides.
Yeah, you've got an ultra wide.
And Apple's not going to be doing that.
Exactly. So that would be the case where you could get your ultra wide dreams. You could have your ultra wide cake and eat it too.
Yeah. I could go for an ultra wide cake.
It's just like a normal cake, but it's really wide.
Yeah, it's like normal cake's like a cylinder. It's just
a cylinder. Like, I've never really thought of cake as cylindrical, but that's an interesting. Well, I guess you're not wrong. It could also be a rectangular prism.
It could be a rectangular prism.
Or I suppose maybe even a mildly trapezoidal prism. Because they're not always straight up. They kind of lean in a little bit.
Maybe like a tiered cake.
Well, a tiered cake would be like multiple trapezoidal. Well, it's also tiered cakes aren't often rectangular. And this is stupid.
Okay.
We've gotten off track yet again.
Yet again.
We're coming up here on the end of the show. But yeah. So I guess the moral of the story is we want a tiered trapezoidal Mac mini cake with an ultra-wide
sounds monitor. Delicious.
I would eat that.
You'd eat it?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd eat it up with my iFixit ProTek toolkit, and I'd tear it down and repair it.
That's what you mean?
That's what I'm going
That's
with.
What you mean that's by eat it.
Mm-hmm. I'd eat it up tech reviewer style.
Oh,
I'd eat up all that content.
Uh-huh.
This is really bad.
Oh yeah, I don't. I think we gotta cut it
off. I'm hemorrhaging subscribers now. We gotta cut this off while we're ahead, and by ahead I mean behind dramatically.
Yes.
So yeah, I guess to summarize it, I'm okay with M1 in a 14-inch MacBook Pro. Anything above that on the product stack is no. That needs to be more powerful.
I agree.
The M1 is great to a point. It was really great when we thought it was the bare minimum, but as soon as they start to use it up the product stack, it's like, no, this is not going to fly here.
Yeah.
You're not about to switch out my 8-core i9 for an M1. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Especially with two freaking ports and 16 gigs of RAM. I mean, good Lord.
That's not going to cut it.
I don't know why 16 gigs of RAM isn't standard.
Because
I mean, I guess the optimization.
Some people don't need it, and Apple can charge you more if you want it.
$200 for 16 is highway robbery.
Well, you can't do
it's
it yourself.
Highway robbery, I tell you.
You can't do it yourself.
I know. So that's the problem. They literally have you like leaned out of a boxcar over a trestle bridge with like their six shooter in one hand, and they're like, listen here, buddy. Give me all your cash. And then you're like, please, sir, I want 16 gigs of RAM. And then they shoot you anyway.
Oh, jeez.
That's Apple in a nutshell. All right, that's the end of our podcast.
All right.
I've been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next week. Have a great night.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Four seasons greetings to you all.